Before we start, any volunteers for anyone to chair the discussion after Simon's talk? Don't all shout at once. Oh, Bill, yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, you okay?
No, I'm fine with that, yeah.
All right.
That was like a torture of a close range.
Right. Well, I'll leave it for you to announce Simon's talk. Right.
As they say, keep your friends close, dot, dot, dot.
Right. Thank you all for coming along. This is Simon Wigley, and as a Marxist, frankly, he is sceptical. And away he goes.
Okay.
A few caveats before I start. You've heard the phrase, thinking outside the box. Well, I hope that for the next however long it is, maybe an hour, there is no box, okay? This will not correspond to any sort of peasant country wisdom or any kind of stands to reason type arguments. This is a model to be looked at on the basis of the model. It will not help solve your immediate work problems, your immediate love problems, or anything like that, okay? It is a model to be taken on its own merits to look at if this is a useful way to look at our theory to try and move things forward. Now, I am a humble vessel trying to channel my own failing genius, and I hope this is going to work, okay? So we'll see how it goes. I'm going to start off. This is what you might call the naive realist theory.
Is my head in the way?
Starting again. Right. If we look at naive realist theory, that is just we are individual people moving around in a world, and there's nothing more to investigate than that. The Samuel Johnson, when he was after watching one of Bishop Buckley's talks, he came out and he said, kicked a rock, and he said, "I refute him thus." You know, that all it is like him and the world around him, and there's nothing more complex than that. Okay, so you can look at that as this is the world around us. We are the people, and we're moving around in it. A slightly more sophisticated way of looking at that is, if you'll bear with my horrible graphics, the notion that we have properties, okay? So our minds have properties that move around, okay? So that we form impressions of the world around us, and the world gives us impressions to form. We know this because we can form false impressions. We know that, for example, if I look at that fan, and I say that fan is someone I met yesterday, then I'm having a hallucination. It's not that I don't freely get to choose what this is, okay? It is a fan, and I am wrong, okay? So this is what fan is, and I am able to have a false consciousness, and that's where false consciousness might come in. When we talk about false consciousness, we say that, for example, that someone does not understand their true position in the world, okay? So they're siding with the capitalists, they think that a fair day's pay for a fair day's work, all that kind of thing, yeah? Whereas, so they're thinking something wrong in here, whereas in fact they should be thinking that, okay, this is the truth, and they have got a mistake there. But there is a truth to be found, and they haven't got it. So that's a slightly more subtle way of looking at it. I want to present a third notion, which is this, okay? We are worlds. That was originally going to be my only three words for that before Mike said, no, I want you to write something more, because that's going to look a bit silly. Okay, the original notion for my talk was to give a blurb just saying we are worlds and to leave it to here. Okay, this notion is, I'm going to put this in square brackets at the bottom. Okay, now, how to explain this? Inside here, we normally think of ourselves as people moving around in an environment. The model I want to present is that instead, we are each worlds. We are each environments. Okay, so I am both the person talking, and I'm looking at all of you, and I am, if you like, I'm modelling you in here, okay? Now, we usually don't look at it that way. A combination of smoke and mirrors from your brain involving depth perception, stereo sound, etc., gives us the notion of a world around us within which we navigate, okay? Now, what I'm saying is that that is simply not the case. Now, hear me out. The reason that I'm saying this, I'm trying to find the best way to explain this. What I'm trying to say is that it's all about you have to think what you're talking about. When you say, I see a person, or I see a fan, or I see that camera, or whatever, what I am, I'm not referring to the thing out there. I'm taking one thought in my mind and matching it to another thought in my mind to a third. So we presumably have a world beyond senses, but we're never talking about it. Okay, we are always talking about the impressions that we receive from it. Okay, so back here, it all sounds so simple when I say it first time round. Okay, so the notion is that basically we are self-contained creatures. Okay, self-contained sets of ideas. Yeah. Now, at the same time, we obviously all come from like a social source, if you like. You know, none of us forms individually. Everyone from birth is engaged with everyone else. Effectively, we are like one software program running massively in parallel over many machines. Now, some of our younger members, probably not our older members, but some of our younger members may have been to an internet cafe and watched people, say, playing a computer game together. So, like, you know, maybe half a dozen people playing the same computer game. And if you look at them, if they're in the same state, even if it's like a third-person top-down thing or whatever, you'll see that all of those are slightly different, even though they are running exactly the same program in exactly the same state. You'll see that they're all slightly different. So they have got slightly different impressions of the mutual world that they're working in, even though they have a common physical underpinning, if you will. Okay? And what I am saying is that we as people, our world is basically like this. Okay, so we put all of our impressions of the world together, and together that is collectively what we mean by the world, because we're not talking about something that is or is not. We don't have that kind of power. We're talking about what we are saying, what we are talking about, what we mean. And when we talk about the world, we are talking about the impressions that we have of it. Okay, so whereas normally our conceit is that we can take a photon from a distant star and we can say that sort of like, you know, the human understanding of the world extends so many billions of light years away because we got a photon from it or something like that. In fact, the extent of our entire world, the entire human civilization, is basically all of this pinkish grey meat that there has been over the last 100,000 years or so. So you have this sort of like, you know, pinkish grey meat hypercube, which is about 100 metres to a side at the moment. If you actually put all the brains together in the world, they'd be about that. And that's sort of like a four-dimensional hypercube going back 100,000 years. And inside this, every single notion, everything we call the world, has happened inside here. It is basically a trick of our vision. It's the way that we go about understanding the world that means that we don't look at it this way. Yeah, that we are used to looking at sort of like, you know, we work in that stands to reason world, yeah, that projected world. Okay, so we don't look at it as just being like so many lumps of meat inside our heads. We look at it as being an extended world around us, but that is a mirage. Sorry, bear with me. So this is channeling versus genius. Right, now, if you take this model and I say, please no stands to reason, please just look at the model. This model allows us to use dialectics in a non-mystical manner. Okay, and this is where I was I'm trying to come to. Okay, now, if you take a statement like, if you take a house and you put a palace beside the house, the house becomes a hut. Yeah, that sounds like you're living in a world that is effectively a bouncy castle. Okay, that's like inflatable, deflatable. All of a sudden, like this big house comes along, that becomes a small house. Yeah, and then you start saying, oh well, it's about impressions, but you can't match a physical thing, yeah, with an impression of a thing, unless everything is commensurate, everything is within the same system. Now, if you are talking about thoughts of castles, yeah, and thoughts of houses, they are commensurate. Okay, so within the mind, yeah, the mind relates these ideas together. So you have a non-mystical way of doing dialectics, because the brain naturally, as I'm trying to say, the brain naturally is a world, not a person navigating. Well, the brain is a world itself, yeah, reflexively sort of holding all these notions in order to move ourselves about. Okay, so if you have, sorry, bear with me a moment. So if you are talking about people's impressions of the world, rather than trying to make some statement about a world outside the senses and a world inside the head, then you can talk about these things together. So, for example, when we try and talk about a factory as being not just a place where things are made, but a factory is a force of production, which could be that, could be other things. A factory is also a relation to production, a means of exploiting us. What do we mean by that? How can a factory at one time just be something that produces food or produces cars or something, and another thing being something that oppresses us? Yeah, is because a factory is actually our impressions of what a factory is as we go about our day, and the impressions are those. Whereas if you had talking about a factory just as a physical thing, and your notions about your boss being your personal notions, there's no way that you could put those together without some mystical notion about what the cosmos is. You know, so I have to say, so like somehow my idea about bosses is penetrates the world. No, if you actually say that what you're talking about a factory is all those notions that you have about a factory, and what you're talking about hating your boss and the 9-to-5 is all those impressions you have of your spending time at work, all those things move together. So it doesn't, it makes perfect sense to start talking about how a factory can oppress you personally, can change your social life. Yeah. Whereas, obviously, if you're talking about something as just a thing, it's just a thing, it couldn't do that. So if you take this model of saying that we are talking about the impressions that we receive from the world, and this is entirely a one-way street, then all of a sudden you can actually deal with the world in the way that we are supposed to, from Marxian analysis, but actually in the Socialist Party we never talk about dialectics because we think it doesn't really fit in with our common sense notions. The next thing to say about dialectics is that when we do talk about dialectics, we usually think of dialectics as being a special case. That we're talking about objects in the world, and then all of a sudden this magical dialectical relationship is added in order to try and relate our world together. So instead of it being... dialectics is a mystifying process within what would ordinarily be something normal. So we'd be talking about factories, we're talking about people working in them, then all of a sudden we talk about a dialectical relationship between people and factories, and how people are actually oppressed by the place that they're in, which is a physical thing. And that sounds strange. However, if you look at it from the impressions that you receive from the world, what you can actually say is that the mind is fluid, fluid with regards to concepts before we start reifying them. So it's not dialectics that is the strange thing. It is the fact that when we are together, in order for us to communicate and to have a collective society, we have to decide on what things are. So I can't say this is a table and him say it's a chair and someone else say it's a fan. We all say it's a fan. We think of it in a certain way. Okay, so, but in order to do that, we lose the flexibility of discussing what it is. Now, if you think about a classic dialectical notion of water turning to steam, for example, okay, this might help. So, if you've got water turning to steam, okay, we see them as two different things. If you think about the physicality of it, it's just a process happening in the world. There's nothing magically watery and steamy about the world beyond the senses. However, that is how we share our experience of the world. But because we do that, because we are used to using these reified concepts, if you like, the language that we use, because language isn't just words, language is the concept beyond the words that we share. Because we live with this shorthand all the time, we lose the ability to just understand, well, this is cold water and this is hot water and this is doing something else. We have cold water here, and then all of a sudden, magically, as you try and relate these ideas in the mind, water becomes steam. And we say, oh, there's a dialectical relationship between these two. You say, what's a dialectical relationship? The thing is that the relationship was already there. It was the objectification, the reification that was the problem. So it is our trying to share our world by sharing the concepts of that world that actually causes the problem. It's not dialectics that's the problem, it's the reification of our communication that's the problem. Now, and this, as part of my model, I might be skipping past myself. What I'm trying to, what I'm about to say now, and this is skipping, skipping pretty hard, possibly. But I'm talking about this, like minds being sort of dialectical, of basically apprehending, apprehending the world as it comes to us and forming models of it. But once we become a society, we, I mean, sort of like, yeah, I mean, our entire world is surrounded by objects that are, you know, non-natural. They're not from nature. Our world is a language, okay? All of these chairs, the clothes that we wear, even like the supposed nature outside. The nature outside is trimmed to within an inch of its life. You know, I mean, so that lawn is almost, it's only about half a dozen species separated from the back end of the moon. You know, so these are all human-regulated spaces. Yeah, so that basically we've turned our entire world into a communication system by reifying that world. Yeah? So instead of it being somewhere that you come to in a more amorphous manner, we have turned everything into, if you like, we've set the world in amber in terms of our thoughts. You know, we don't have sort of like the whole world is dealable in chunks. Okay, now the heart of what I'm now about to try and say is that. That underlies capitalism, that underlies private property. Beneath even private property is the fact that the world is chopped up in this way in the first place. Okay? That, if you like, capitalists and private property in general, that is a particular problem within a general society, a general way that we have run our world from year dot. So, we have, as a society, we have created our world as this, I think the word is cybernetic, you know, a world that is basically made up of objects that we have created. Yeah? And on top of that, since now they are objects, they're apprehendable, they're alienatable, you now have capitalists able to say that not only is it an object, it's a private object, it's my object, it's not your object. But the original problem was the fact that we didn't have a fluid relationship to our world in the first place. We had lost our flexibility. Okay? Now, where am I going from here? Where I'm going from here is to look at what we are as a party. Okay? Now, we and the rest of the left... Sorry, I'm using up a lot of this flip chart for very, very little value, it seems. We and the rest of the left... whilst we attack capitalists and even private property society, we do not deal with the problem of how objects are formed in our society in the first place. Okay, we take the world as it is. So, whereas when we attack capitalists, we basically take the world as it is, and we say, "Well, so like we want more of that. You know, we want less of this." But we don't say, we're going, apart from Durruti, who said it properly, but apart from Durruti, we don't say that we are going to destroy everything and rebuild it ourselves. Yeah? What we say is that whatever those objects are in society, we want them. You've got them, we made them, we want them. Okay? We don't address the problem of why did we make the objects in that way in the first place? Yeah? And so how can we perhaps use this situation to our advantage? Yeah. Now, because we tend to be in the business of confronting capital at its own game and trying to get back products that it's already made, that makes us, I would argue, and this is going to be fairly contentious, I would say that we are actually more conservative than capitalist parties. Yeah. We are in the business of conservation. Yeah. We are trying to keep everything as it is, while at the same time getting it for ourselves. And capitalism's great game against us is that every time capitalism has a new intervention, we don't know what to do, what the hell to do about it. A good example at the moment is the fact that, for example, capitalism importing labour from all over the world. Yeah? You will find that people, even people who otherwise might consider themselves labour or whatever, will find themselves terrified by these new changes, by these new people coming in. You know, new concepts, new ideas that have to be assimilated. They don't want to have to deal with that. They want to deal with the world back in the 1930s of red telephone boxes and things like that, or the 1980s and flying pickets. They don't want to have to deal with the 21st century. We find that the people who we want to call our comrades, and ourselves even, we are some of the most conservative people going, to the point of ourselves, where we find ourselves that when we try and talk about the socialist world, you know, in the by and by, we find more and more, as we describe it, we find ourselves living in a retirement village somewhere on the South Downs in the 1950s. Yeah, if you actually look at the way that we describe ourselves, like there's green and pleasant land, red pillar boxes, all that kind of thing. We're not talking about a world sort of beyond capitalism, as in we've got rid of the people who owned it. We're not talking about a future that we produce in. And something came to me, not in here, because it came to me just over dinner. I think someone was saying about equal access. Equal access, I think, was used in the sense of equal access to goods. Yeah. Now, equal access to goods is basically, that is not what we are meant to be talking about as a socialist society. We are talking about equal access to production. Yeah. Now, we'd like equal access to those goods, but if you think about it historically, yeah, so as soon as you go through a new cycle of production, yeah, if you've got control of the means of production, you know, if you've got equal access to the means of production, you get rid of that problem. You see what I mean? So going forwards, yeah, we should be looking at equal access to those means of production, those means of creating new values. Now, normally in society, what happens is that up to now, is that new values, when they are created, they just basically come onto the market. You know, they come into society. And capitalism really doesn't know what to do with them. I mean, a fantastic example of the last 20 years has been the internet. When the internet first turned up, I mean, who knew how to sell any of that stuff? You know, if you think back to the first days of the internet, people thought, well, this is it. This is over for capitalism. Because they just thought, well, this is something that it doesn't correspond to capitalism's norms. Therefore, capitalism must be out the window. However, capitalism has a process of recuperation. Now, that is not sophisticated. All it means is that capitalism basically sits around long enough and digests the new until everyone's accepted it, and it becomes part of, you know, the exist. It reifies. It becomes part of the new set of goods. Yeah? What hasn't happened is we haven't tried to step in at that point and say, we are the people who, as I say, equal access to production. We are the people who do this breaking down of values and recreate them. Whereas capitalism just says, it shrugs at them, but it then says, well, you weren't doing anything with them, just let's them gradually settle in. What we should be doing when new technologies, when new things come along in our society, we should be at that point of saying, great, okay, the past was yours, these are ours. Okay? I mean, we don't want them to have the old, yeah? But if we can take the new off them as it comes, yeah, within a productive cycle or two, capitalism is just out of the water. I mean, we know how badly capitalism struggles to try and integrate new technology, new concepts into its society, even when it's not facing any opposition. Our opposition should be there. This is what a socialist party should be doing. A socialist party should be interfering in that process of recuperation, because, as I said, trying to think this through logically to what I've just said 5 minutes ago, I think if I just carrying forward. Okay, sorry, I'm going to fill that in a second. My new notion for the for a political party, how it should function, I believe is similar to the way that Marx would see it, though I don't have the paper in front of me. Now, what I think is that, okay, we have the existing left-wing parties, we have ourselves, and we look at the world in a certain way, and we want to take the existing and we want to organise it for ourselves. Okay, that's fine. Okay, but we have to realise that that is yesterday. It's already yesterday. Okay, and you're organised as you organise those values. You're organising yourselves into the past. Now, a lot of people are just going to confront the world in that way. So you need to have a sort of, you know, you need to have a way that people can relate to the world in that fashion. You need to have like a sort of old-fashioned type, you know, left or, you know, socialist party. You do, however, need to have a party that is going forwards to the future. You need to have a party that is interrupting that process of recuperation, where capitalism just gets the new and it just shrugs its shoulders and says, well, you don't want it, and it gradually settles in, so it becomes part of capitalism. Yeah? Instead, we say, OK, we can run that better than you. Because if you think about, I mean, if you think about the internet at the time, in the 1990s, let's say the capitalists didn't know what to do with it, and there were organisations coming on, people like the Electronic Freedom Foundation and the like, who were basically turning around and saying, well, yes, we know what to do with it. But they weren't strong enough, and they weren't able to they weren't able to beat the process of monetizing the internet, of basically convincing people that the internet is something that you should pay for rather than something that you should have for free, etc., etc. It was assimilated back into capitalism. Now, if there was an organized political movement actually trying to take over these new phases, these new productive phases, and actually saying, well, this is the new world here, we take all of this for the new world, and you leave capitalism to wither on the vine, yeah? You could actually come up with a process whereby you would basically you'd have the old political parties fighting over what was the old world, but the new to like you know, new if you like you know, what capitalism calls entrepreneurs, people with new ideas. Yeah, you would have a poll for them to go to say, well, you know, if you want to do things on the internet, you don't know how to sell them to capitalism, but if you want to do this, this is where you come. You come to us. Yeah, this is, you know, we are the kind of society where you can do what you want. Okay, we are the society of new values. We are the society that picks these things up and runs with them. Okay, so you effectively form a nascent society of the future that capitalism simply does not understand, never mind know what to do with. Yeah? It is, however, more the revolution of Hagbard Selim than Lev Davidovich. It's very much a forward-thinking process, and not one that fits into the leftist mould. And I think regardless of what we say about the leftist mould, most of us do actually fit into a leftist mould. Now, I realise that I have channeled as best I can, and I may not have made as much sense as you may have liked, so I will now sit down for questions, and I hope that I've done something productive at least.